2. Documents. Apart from the register of the Buna Infirmary, the transfer lists from this facility to Auschwitz or Birkenau, and the death book, which will be examined in Chapter 5, the prosecution did not present documents on the alleged atrocious living conditions of the inmates. A number of reports on punishment orders, classified NI 11838, Prosecution Exhibit Number 1477, NI 11002, Prosecution Exhibit Number 1482, NI 11003, Prosecution Exhibit Number 1483, and NI 11029, Prosecution Exhibit Number 1491, show just the opposite of what the prosecution claimed. Punishments of inmates for infractions were not arbitrary, but were meted out according to strict regulations, which I have described in detail in another book. The relevant directives by the first leader of protective custody camp, SS Obersturmführer Vinzenz Schüttel, reads as follows, quote, Concentration Camp Auschwitz III, Department 3. Monowitz, 17 December 1943. Regarding corporal punishments. To all subcamps of Concentration Camp Auschwitz III. The punishment orders for inmates to be punished with corporal punishment are to be handled as follows. 1. On promulgation of punishment. The punishment orders are sent by Department 3 to the relevant labor camp, where the inmate is located. The inmate is brought before the medical orderly of the camp in question, who inspects him, crosses out what is not applicable on the punishment order under medical report, and signs the punishment order. The punishment order is then immediately returned to Department 3. 2. Carrying out of punishment. For inmates in the satellite camps, corporal punishment is carried out in the camp in question. For this purpose, the punishment order is sent to the camp in question by Department 3, after approval by the head of the central office. The inmate is read the punishment report and the punishment order, the announcement is noted on the punishment report, and the punishment is carried out by a designated inmate, under the strictest observation of the regulations, see back of the punishment order. The exact date, including the time, of the carrying out of the punishment, as well as the number, last and first name of the inmate carrying out the punishment, must then be entered in the punishment order, and signed by the same inmate in the relevant place. The camp or unit leader and the medical orderly of the camp in question must be present at the execution of the sentence. They shall sign the punishment order, camp or unit leader, in case of protective custody camp leader, medical orderly, in case of camp doctor. The punishment order is then immediately returned to Department 3, unquote. Other documents, some of which were seized by U.S. officials but not adduced at the trial, provide a completely different picture from that put forward by the prosecution. Headquarters Order No. 4 of 1944, Monowitz, issued by the Monowitz camp's commandant, SS Hauptsturmführer Heinrich Schwerz, on 22 February 1944, contained the following provisions, quote, 2. Roll calls. At the last commandant's meeting in Berlin, the chief of the main office emphasized that roll calls should be kept as short as possible, so that the inmates do not have to stand longer than necessary. I draw the camp commander's attention especially to the need to shorten the one-time roll call. Given the relatively small number of inmates in the individual subcamps, a roll call must not last longer than 5 or at most 10 minutes. 5. Inmate benefits, bonus coupons. The report on the labor situation shows that various armaments companies where inmates were employed paid very small bonuses to the inmates. Some camps were excluded from bonuses altogether. The camp leaders must immediately determine the reason for the low or non-payment of bonuses in January 1944. As soon as I receive the individual reports, I will personally contact the companies or construction contractors. Report by the 27th of February 1944. 7. Mistreatment of inmates. It has happened in a subcamp that inmates were beaten and sometimes mistreated by civilians, with whom they were working at the same work site, so that they had to be temporarily admitted to the infirmary. In cases where cooperation with civilians is unavoidable, the camp leaders are responsible for order, and must have the civilians instructed again by the factory, on how to treat inmates. On the other hand, any mistreatment of an inmate by a civilian must be reported to me immediately. I take this opportunity to once again expressly draw your attention to the existing order that no SS man may lay a hand on an inmate. In the fifth year of the war, every effort is to be made to preserve the labor fitness of the inmates. If an inmate commits an offense, the prescribed report is to be made, unquote. In the following months, Schwerz issued further directives on the treatment of inmates. Here is the text of Headquarters Order No. 6 of 1944. Monowitz, the 22nd of April 1944, quote. 12. Inmate sickness rates. In some camps, inmate sickness rates have risen dramatically. The camp, report and labor service leaders must constantly monitor the sickness status of the inmates and have malingerers examined by the chief camp doctor. 13. Bonuses. The number of bonuses issued by the companies is still too low in relation to the total number of inmates deployed. The camp leaders must maintain constant contact with the company directorates in order to ensure that the bonus coupons are paid out in full, unquote. The International Tracing Service at Aarhusen is in possession of documentation from the Auschwitz Museum on bonus coupons assigned to Monowitz inmates during the period 2 February to 24 March 1944. In this regard, some partial data regarding subcamp Gorleschau is known. The unit report for the month of April, dated 10 May 1944 and directed to First Leader of Protective Custody Camp, Concentration Camp Auschwitz III, states, quote, in April, the premiums paid amounted to 3,239 Reichsmark, unquote. The May report, dated 7 June 1944, mentions 4,361 Reichsmark. The report on the labor camp for the time from 1 June until 30 June 44, dated 1 July of that year, informs with a few more words, quote, in the month of May, 4,541 Reichsmarks was paid out to inmates in the form of WAP bonuses, unquote. From this series of reports, we learn that this figure was 4,208 Reichsmarks for June, 4,555 Reichsmarks for July, and 3,603 Reichsmarks for August. Headquarters Order No. 8 of 1944 of the Monowitz Camp, dated 14 July 1944, contains further provisions on inmate deployment, among other things, quote, effective immediately, the labor deployment of inmates is to be closely monitored by the camp leaders. Above all, it must be ensured that every skilled worker is deployed in his profession, because this is the only way to achieve 100% labor productivity. If, for any reason, skilled workers are not deployed accordingly, they are to be reported immediately to the Headquarters Concentration Camp Auschwitz III, Department 3. On the other hand, inmates registered as skilled workers but not recognized as such are to be removed and reported to Department 3A in Auschwitz. It is also inadmissible for skilled workers to be transferred from one day shift to the following night shift by individual foreman, without sufficient time off in between. I hold the camp leaders responsible for the fact that such disregard of the necessary rest period does not occur anymore, unquote. Important directives from SS Obergruppenführer Oswald Pohl on the treatment of inmates arrived at Auschwitz and Monowitz in March 1944, quote. The chief of the SS Economic Administrative Main Office, Berlin, the 8th of March 1944. Subject, inmate deployment. To the Commandant Concentration Camp Auschwitz 1-3. 1. New, extensive armaments production, which we have to carry out with inmates, requires that every inmate, who is not absolutely necessary at his current workplace, is released for these measures. Anything that does not serve the cause of victory must be stopped. This includes embellishment work. This year, I prohibit the planting of flowers and ornamental shrubs by inmates in gardens and green areas. Where horticultural facilities exist on the sites, these are to be planted with vegetables, tomatoes and the like, for camp purposes. 2. Regular street sweeping detachments, so-called daily yard sweepers, are to be discontinued. In the fifth year of the war, it suffices to clean squares and streets in the camps and garrisons once a week, on Sundays in the morning. 3. I once more point out that the inmates' labor belongs to the Reich. Anyone who employs inmates in his household or for his private purposes, without my express permission and without payment, is guilty of fraud. I will take action against infractions. 4. I have no objection to the existence of inmate bans at some concentration camps, if these inmates are fully engaged in work during the day. They can play music in their free time. 5. The commandants advise the protective custody camps and the leaders of the labor camps that they must ensure that the inmates, who are assigned to shift work, can sleep undisturbedly. Under no circumstances may these inmates be woken from their sleep, for example to check that the commandos are full during roll call. Signed, Pol. SS Gruppenführer and General of the Waffen-SS, unquote. On the 26th of October 1943, Pol issued unconditional directives on the treatment of inmates to the commanders of 19 concentration camps, including Auschwitz. The relevant letter begins as follows, quote, "Within the framework of German war production, thanks to the construction work carried out during the past 2 years, concentration camps represent a factor of decisive strategic importance. We have created from nothing armaments factories that have no equal. Now we must act with all forces at our disposal, so that the achievements realized so far are not only maintained, but furthermore steadily increased in the future. Since the workshops and factories are essentially set up, this is only possible by us maintaining the working strength of the inmates, and further increasing it. In recent years, as part of the tasks of rehabilitation then in force, it might have been unimportant whether an inmate could or could not provide useful labor. But now, the working strength of the inmates is important, and all measures of the commandants, the heads of Office 5 and the doctors, must chiefly focus on maintaining the health and the productivity of the inmates. Not from hypocritical sentimentality, but because we need their arms and legs, because they have to contribute to the German people achieving a great victory. For this, we need to take to heart the welfare of the inmates. As a first goal, I set this: no more than 10% of all inmates may be unfit for work due to illness. This objective must be achieved by a joint effort of all those responsible. For this, the following measures are necessary: 1. A correct and appropriate diet, 2. Correct and appropriate clothing, 3. The use of all natural health resources, 4. Avoiding all unnecessary effort, not directly essential to the ability to work, 5. Productivity bonuses. Unquote. On each point, Pol gave very detailed directions and rules of conduct, and concluded peremptorily, quote, "Every camp commandant who receives this letter must immediately forward it for information to the chief administrative officer and the camp medical officer. These two officers must certify with their signature on the letter that they have read it carefully. I will take care personally to monitor the measures set out again in this letter." Unquote. It is clear that these directives applied eminently to the Monowitz camp. On the 26th of October 1944, the chief of office Group D, concentration camps of the SS Economic Administrative Main Office, Wirtschaftsverwaltungshauptamt, WVHA, SS Gruppenführer Richard Glucks, addressed the following letter directly to Schwerz, quote, "Subject: preservation of the inmates' working capacity. To the camp commandant, concentration camp Auschwitz III. It has recently been noted in various labor camps that the inmates housed there do not have the opportunity to get sufficient sleep due to incorrect scheduling. The commanders of the concentration camps must make absolutely sure that the inmates, from whom we must demand the highest level of performance at all workplaces, have the opportunity to rest after work, by getting sufficient and undisturbed sleep. Every inmate must be able to sleep for at least 7.5 to 8 hours, if he is to be 100% fit the next day. Special care must be taken to ensure that inmates assigned to the night shift can also sleep the required number of hours undisturbedly during the day, after returning from their shift, and that their sleep is not interrupted by roll calls. In addition, especially in the labor camps, care must be taken to ensure that each inmate has a bed to himself, and that the inmate has the opportunity to dry his wet clothing in his quarters, or in specially designed rooms. You must pay particular attention to all these points, to ensure that the health of the inmates and their commitment to the armament measures are maintained." Unquote. On the 29th of October 1942, the Reichsführer SS issued an order with the subject line, "Parcels sent to inmates," which was forwarded to Germany's Department of Homeland Security, Reichssicherheitshauptamt, RSHA, and SSWVHA, and from there to the concentration camp commandants. It stipulated, quote, "I permit with immediate effect that inmates may receive packages of food from their families. 2. The number of parcels an inmate can receive is unlimited. However, the contents must be consumed by the inmate on the day of arrival or the following day. If this is not possible, distribution will also be made to other inmates. 3. This order of mine applies not only to German inmates, but also to all other inmates who have the opportunity to have food parcels sent to them. 4. Every member of the SS who misappropriates the food package of an inmate will be punished by death. 5. If an inmate abuses the sending of parcels to smuggle secret messages, tools, or other unauthorized items, he is immediately punished with death. His barracks is banned from receiving parcels for 3 months." Unquote. The copy of the order sent to Auschwitz concentration camp bears at the bottom an annotation by the first leader of the protective custody camp saying, quote, "To all labor camps and mail departments, Concentration Camp Auschwitz III. The 24th of August 1944. Unquote. This was communicated on the 1st of August by SS Gruppenführer Glucks to the commandants of Concentration Camp Auschwitz III in the following terms, quote, "The Supreme Chief, SS Obergruppenführer and Major General of the Waffen-SS, has ordered that no parcels from abroad, even when they come from the Red Cross, may be turned over to inmates. All parcels are to be opened, and their contents carefully inspected. Cans are to be opened, and all foodstuffs and confections as well as convenience items are to be searched carefully for prohibited messages, propaganda materials and the like. Foodstuffs are to be turned over to the camp kitchen. All other convenience items are to be turned over to the inmates as needed. Significant cases of prohibited messages are to be reported immediately to the SS Economic Administrative Main Office via Office Group T." Unquote. On the 18th of August, SS Gruppenführer Glucks communicated to the commandants of Concentration Camp Auschwitz III that Pohl had revoked the order of the 1st of August, except for the provision concerning the thorough inspection of parcels, and that Himmler's order of the 29th of October 1942 remained in effect. Defense attorney Alfred Seidel presented two negotiations concerning an SS NCO, Jakob Jorkum. The first begins like this, quote, "Negotiation on the commitment of SS Unterscharführer Jorkum. I was instructed by SS Hauptsturmführer Plonin on the 17th of October 1940 about my duties in general, in particular about the obligation to maintain secrecy about matters which have become known to me in the course of my service, and whose secrecy is naturally necessary or especially prescribed. I was further instructed that the obligation to maintain official secrets continues to exist, even after I have left the SS. I am aware that I am guilty of disobeying a service order in the event of non-compliance, and I also know that a violation of this order constitutes treason." Unquote. Given the date, it is obvious that the duty of silence was general and generic, and had no relation to the alleged gassings. The second document echoes the duty of silence, but added to it is the peremptory prohibition against mistreatment of detainees, quote, "Negotiation. On the commitment of SS Oberscharführer Jakob Jorkum. I was instructed by SS Obersturmführer Musser on the 10th of December 1943 about my duties in general, in particular about the obligation to maintain secrecy about matters that have become known to me in the course of my service, and whose secrecy is naturally necessary or especially prescribed. I was further instructed that the obligation to maintain official secrets continues to exist even after my later retirement from the SS. I am aware that I am guilty of disobeying a service order in the event of non-compliance, and I also know that a violation of this order constitutes treason. I am also aware that the Führer alone decides on the life and death of an enemy of the state. No member of the SS, and no person obliged to serve in the Waffen-SS, is therefore authorized to lay hands on an enemy of the state, or to physically abuse him. An inmate is only punished by the commandant. Likewise, Executions to be carried out in the concentration camps will only be carried out on the orders of the Reichswehr-SS and SS leaders authorized by him. I make the following declaration on a handshake. I swear on oath that I will always carry out my official duties in the Auschwitz concentration camp punctually and conscientiously, and that I will maintain official secrecy. In confirmation of this act of commitment, I sign this negotiation, after it has been read out. Auschwitz, the 19th of December 1943. Jakob Jorkum, handwritten signature. SS Oberscharfuhrer. Unquote. This reflected the repeated directives of the WVHA, which had been reiterated on the 8th of December 1943 by SS Gruppenführer Glucks, in a letter with a subject line, Supervision of Inmate Units, which he sent to the commanders of the concentration camps, including Auschwitz 1 through 3, quote, "Every sub-leader and guard must admonish inmates loitering around to work. It goes without saying that it is forbidden to hit, push or even touch the inmate. The inmate is to be urged only by word." Unquote. As I have documented elsewhere, all provisions relating to the treatment of inmates, the regulations for concentration camps, camp organization, the instructions on the tasks and duties of concentration camp guards, the handouts for the instruction of SS officers serving on concentration camp duty, strictly forbade mistreatment of inmates. This was also explicitly expressed as early as the 9th of July 1942 for the Monowitz camp, quote, "Discussion with Obersturmführer Schwerz about inmate deployment. This is currently suffering greatly from the fact that, due to the latest order, all Poles are being removed from concentration camp Auschwitz and housed in camps in the Old Reich. They are being replaced by Jews from all European countries. Their number is to be increased to about 100,000. As a result, different workers were deployed at the individual construction sites almost every day. Various abuses were also discussed. They are absolutely condemned by the camp management, and there are strict orders to refrain from any mistreatment or other measures that could undermine the inmates' working capacity. All such incidents were requested to be reported immediately, so that immediate action could be taken." Unquote. That these were not empty words is clear from the following document, quote, "The Garrison Physician. Auschwitz, the 7th of June 1943. Auschwitz. S/reference, H, KL/July 43/Dr. W. Re. Subject, ill-treatment of inmate 115,385 Richert Yedzykiewicz. Reference, communication of the Buna medical officer, the 5th of July 1943. Attachments, none. To the first head of the protective custody camp, Auschwitz. The Buna camp physician has informed the Auschwitz garrison physician that inmate 115,385, Richert Yedzykiewicz, was admitted to the inmate hospital with bruises to the left eye and the scalp, contusion of the back of the left hand, and bruises on the buttocks. Yedzykiewicz was mistreated with a rubber hose by the block eldest of Block 24, Buna, inmate 113,932 Otto Ostolo. The Auschwitz garrison physician requests an investigation and the punishment of the guilty party. For information 2, Commandant of Concentration Camp Auschwitz, Section 3A. The garrison physician Auschwitz, signature, SS Hauptsturmführer." Unquote. Other documents show that mistreatment of inmates even by civilian workers was not tolerated. On the 20th of April 1944, the camp leader of the subcamp Gorleschau transmitted to the first leader of the protective custody camp, Concentration Camp Auschwitz III, the following report, quote, "On the 20th of April 1944, at 6 p.m., the foreman of Unit Lime Kiln 1, the Jewish inmate number 51,876, Mannheimer Samuel, reported the following. For several days, the inmates of the above-mentioned unit have been harassed and insulted constantly by the civilian Paul Otsus, Gottesgen No. 54, who was assigned as a burner. He also used phrases such as, 'Whether you stinking Jews work or not, you'll go to the crematorium and go through the furnace anyway,' etc. During one of the earlier shifts, he also tried to shake a Jew, who was climbing down a ladder into the lime kiln, off the ladder with the same remark, 'You are going into the furnace after all.' since these remarks have a bad effect on the inmates' condition and endanger the work and safety of the camp, I ask Obersturmführer to take immediate measures. The unit itself has been at the lime kiln for a year, is one of the best, and the company has never complained about the foreman or the other inmates assigned there. I made representations to the management about this, and they also attach great importance to strict punishment of the above-mentioned. One carbon copy for the political department. Unquote. On the 5th of September 1944, the camp leader himself sent the following letter to the first leader of the protective custody camp, Concentration Camp Auschwitz III, quote, subject, mistreatment of inmates by civilians. On the 2nd of September 1944 at 6 p.m., on entering the camp, I was informed by the Jewish protective custody inmate number 176,456, Wolnemann Meyer, that he had been beaten by the foreman, Pinkos, who was working at the primary crusher, in the afternoon at 3 p.m., and that his glasses had been smashed. I had the foreman called by the block leader, and questioned him as to whether and why he had beaten the above-mentioned inmate. At first, he denied it, and only after being questioned several times, did he admit to having mistreated the inmate, which he justified by the fact that he had found him asleep. Master Pinkos has already been warned by the management and by me once, and has been told several times that, if an inmate behaves improperly during work, he must report it to me. Furthermore, the information provided by the foreman was not correct, as this incident was immediately investigated by the block leader, SS Unterscharführer Claire, on my orders. I asked the Obersturmführer to arrange for further action. The management was informed of the report. Unquote. A decree by the plant manager, dated 6 June 1944, established guidelines for the compilation of a report by the master civilian who supervised the inmates, quote, in the factory and in the quarry. The report must state the inmates or capo's number and the exact time. The report must be made on the same day. A direct confrontation with the inmate or capo must be avoided at all costs. It is again pointed out that any approach to the inmate or capo, whether written or verbal, will be severely punished. Any attempt to bring about such an approach will also be punished. Unquote. A letter on the letterhead of the IG Farbenindustrie Aktiengesellschaft, Werke Auschwitz, addressed, quote, to the camp management of the Monowitz labor camp, Mr. Obersturmführer Schutter, Monowitz, unquote, contains the following request, quote, punishment of inmate number 157,040. Enclosed you will find a report from our Mr. Diplom Engineer Weissmuller about the behavior of the above inmate during cleanup work at Barracks E612. We request that the inmate be punished severely. Unquote. This document attests to the regulatory procedure, hence the fact that IG Farben civilians could not punish on their own initiative inmates who had shown any misconduct, but for this, they had to apply to the camp management. On every non-natural death of an inmate, the competent SS authorities had to fill out a specific report, which ascertained the fact. This ruled out arbitrary killings fantasized by some witnesses. In this regard, one can mention the report on the suicide of an inmate, Gorleschau, the 24th of November 1943, about the suicide of inmate Itzek Zuskind, 157,826, and the fatal accident on the 10th of October 1943, to which the inmates Jakob Orpinz, 61,054, and Isaac Uziel, 109,669, fell victim. The report on another, non-fatal incident of the 24th of April 1943, belies the testimonial fables about wounded inmates left to their own devices until the end of their shift. The document is dated Gorleschau, the 25th of April 1943, and has workplace accident as its subject, quote, to the leader of the protective custody camp, Hauptsturmführer Aumeier. Concentration Camp Auschwitz. Saturday, the 24th of April 1943, at 4 p.m., inmate number 64,051, Konigsmann, Schlamer, was hit on the foot by a stone coming from above while working in the quarry, and suffered a broken leg. He was given first aid by the doctor on duty in the quarry, inmate number 65,754, who also witnessed the accident. Unquote.